Fans, it's great to have you back with us as we get ready for baseball on this Sunday with the Giants coming up. We're joined on this Sunday morning by Peter Golenbach, and the book that he wrote, and it's a terrific book. It's called Whispers of the Gods, Tales from Baseball's Golden Age, told by the men who played it. Peter is a graduate of Dartmouth College, 1967, NYU Law School, 1970, and I'll tell you why I'm going to say this in a little while. But as I said, he's got 10 New York Times bestsellers. He's got Dynasty, the New York Yankees, 1949 to 64. The famous Bronx Zoo book with Sparky Lyle. Bums, an oral history of the Brooklyn Dodgers. Balls with Greg Nettles. Amazing, the miraculous history of the New York's most beloved baseball team. And many, many more. Another one with Johnny Damon as well. Peter, welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Well, thank you so much, Marty. It's an honor to be with you.
Well, I will tell you this. I graduated the University of Florida in 1967 and from the University of Miami Law School in 1971 because I spent
Almost with you. I was almost with you. If I hadn't gone to NYU, I was going to the University of Miami Law School.
Well, we would have been colleagues there. I ended up six months in the Army Reserve, so I graduated in 71. You graduated in 70. But
right.
Look at it. Look at our paths. Two lawyers talking about baseball. I like it. The book is terrific, Whispers of the Gods. And so if the fans understand a little bit about it, these are interviews that Peter did over the years. And we'll talk about the style of doing it and chasing these people down to get it done. But it's very much like Glory of Their Times with Lawrence Ritter. But my question to you before we get into the book, how in the heck did the lawyer get into writing about baseball?
Well, after I worked 6 weeks as a tort lawyer, my boss told me to go through all these cases and tell them what he had. And I found that six of the cases, the statute of limitations had run.
Okay.
It was a 10-year statute of limitations. So I went to him and I said, I don't know what you're going to do, but these six cases, the statute had run. He said, call them on the telephone and tell them why they don't have a case. And I said to him, I quit.
Okay. So where did you go?
I went to Prentice Hall, and I worked as a writer. I worked as a lawyer-writer writing President Nixon's wage and price controls in the summer of 1972. And I worked there for about 6 weeks, and then I saw their trade book catalog. As a boy, I had read The New York Yankees by Frank Graham. It published about 1946, 1947, stories about Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig and Joe DiMaggio, and I was just mesmerized by it. And while I was a kid, during the 16 years, starting in 49 to 64, those 16 years, the Yankees won 14 pennants and 9 world championships. So I wanted to write the sequel to The New York Yankees by Frank Graham. So I walked downstairs to the trade book division of Prentice Hall and talked myself into a contract.
Wow. And the book turned into a bestseller. How about that?
It sure did. But it was the opportunity that I had to go around the country and interview Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris and Whitey Ford and gosh, just so many. Phil Rizzuto, it just went on and on and on.
Well, I've done that for so many years, and Raph, our producer, knows that. If it was a World Series and I went to the city, I would look up and see which former ballplayers lived near that city. It's interesting for me to ask you, how did you do it? How did you track people like Mantle down and Whitey Ford and people like that?
Well, I started in the tombs of Yankee Stadium. Marty Appel, who was the assistant PR guy to Bob Fischel, said, by all means, if you get a contract, you come and you can do your research. Mike Burke was the owner of the Yankees at the time, a lovely, lovely man. And when I asked him, would it be okay to get the addresses and telephone numbers of all your former players? They said, absolutely. So they opened it up to me. They gave me all the addresses. They gave me all the telephone numbers, Mantle, Maris, whoever I wanted. And for the next 3 years, I chased these people down.
Wow, and of course, then you get credentialed, I assume, to go to ball games as well. Did that happen?
Oh, my goodness, It was fantastic. It was just fantastic. When the old timers day that I went to, I got to see Connie Mack was there. Who else was there? some of the really, really old timers. It was thrilling. Also, you know, to hang out with people like Thurman Munson. I'm standing in the dugout with Thurman Munson, and he's being talked to by a fellow who looked like Colonel Sanders. He had this white uniform on, and he was standing there. And while he was, I noticed that Munson was spitting tobacco juice on his pants and his white shoes. You know, it was absolutely hilarious. Couple of times, Ron Bloomberg would ask me to, you know, grab a glove and go out in center field and shag for him. Wow. I mean, is this a dream come true or what? It absolutely was. It was fabulous.
I love it. Peter Golenbach is with us. The book is Whispers of the Gods, Tales from Baseball's Golden Age, told by the men who played it. So let's talk about the book and how it came about and how you put together and chose the interviews that you're going to put in there. So let's talk a little bit about the book.
Sure. Larry, when I was a junior at Dartmouth, I was a sports editor of the Dartmouth. And one day this book showed up, The Glory of Their Times by Larry Ritter. And I started reading it, and it was interviews with players who had played with Ty Cobb, played with Babe Ruth, played with Shoeless Joe Jackson. And I'm sitting there and reading it, and I'm just absolutely mesmerized. And to this day, I do believe The Glory of Their Times is really the Bible of baseball. I mean, without that book, it would be very hard to know what it was like during the 10s and the 20s for the ball players of that time. And it was just magnificent. And so about 3 years ago, my very close friend, Jim Boughton, he was in Dynasty. He lived three blocks from me when we both lived in Englewood, New Jersey. He developed dementia, and last year he died. And so I wanted to do something that would sort of keep his memory alive. And that's sort of how it started. And so I determined that my interviews with him would be the first chapter and the last chapter of the book. The first chapter was how he made it to the majors, despite the fact that he never should have. He's a little guy. Nobody noticed him much, but somehow he made it to the majors, and he had, you know, two magnificent seasons where he was, I think, 21-7 and 18-13, something like that, with the Yankees. And then the last chapter was about ball four, sort of the iconic ball four, and how badly he felt about the reaction to it. Because, you know, Mickey Mantle had said, as long as, you know, if Jim Boughton ever comes to Old Timers Day, I'm not going to go. Mm. So Jim said, you know, it's just, you know, he never went to Old Timers Day again for a long, 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 long time. And so that was chapter one and the last chapter, 17. And in addition, over the years, I had done, you know, Dynasty about the Yankees. Bums was about the Brooklyn Dodgers. Wrigleyville was the Chicago Cubs. Fenway was the Boston Red Sox, and Amazon was the New York Mets. So I thought I would pick a sampling of those interviews. And I started with Ted Williams and Stan Musial and Roy Campanella and Phil Rizzuto. You know, I wanted some big names, obviously. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also knew from what I remembered of the interviews, the guys who told really wonderful stories. You know, even people like Ellis Clary, who had played on the 1944 and 1945 St. Louis Browns. The Browns, believe it or not, went to the World Series in 1944. And he was telling me why in 1945 they didn't go back again. And it was because they had hired as a center fielder a guy by the name of Pete Gray.
Right.
Pete Gray had one arm.
Yes,
and the reason they put him out there was to draw fans. The Browns at the time was drawing something like 2,500 fans a game. So they wanted Gray somehow to draw more fans. And Gray hit about 219, whereas their regular center fielder, who was, you know, a wonderful player, he sat on the bench and the team lost. And the stories that he told about his teammates were, you know, just incredible, how they would get a dead fish and put a dead fish in the pocket of Pete Gray's pants. Or they would take his hat and punch out. He had a straw hat, and they would punch it out. And I just, you know, where else do you get such information? It was just great.
No, I love it. I love the stories. And, you know, the style in the book, they're just like, it's not like question and answer. In other words, the style of the book is it's a story being told. And I find that very interesting. So it's not like Ellis Clary says, and by the way, I played for the St. Louis Browns. And then you say, well, what happened?
Yeah, exactly. No,
it's really edited extremely well. It reads so easily.
Well, you know what? There was one chapter that was like that. That was my interview with Roger Maris. I had tried to chase Roger down. I sent him telegrams. I wrote him letters, nothing. So I went to Gainesville, where they had a beer distributor. He had played for the St. Louis Cardinals in 66 and 67, or was it 67, 68? And they had won two pennants, you know, with the Cardinals, and Roger was part of that. So I went to Gainesville. They gave him a beer distributorship, and obviously he was avoiding me. So I thought, okay, well, DiMaggio wouldn't see me, and I guess Roger won't either. So I got in my car and drove down to Atlanta, where I went to see Cleet Boyer. He had a sort of a country and western bar down there called the Golden Glove. So I pull in there, and Cleet says, I'll see you tomorrow. Come at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'll come and talk to you. So I go to the Golden Glove at 9 o'clock in the morning, and I'm sitting there drinking coffee while all the guys around the former high school injured football players are sitting around the bar drinking beer at 9 o'clock in the morning. And I sat there, 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock. Huh. Cleet showed up at 9 o'clock at night, but he showed up with Roger Maris.
Wow.
I mean, my jaw dropped. And so Cleet takes Roger and me over to the table and sits the two of us down. We're sitting opposite each other. Hi, how do you do? How are you? You know, and after about a minute of sort of, you know, this uncomfortable silence, Roger said to me, would you like to go outside and talk? Hmm. And we talked for a good hour and 15 minutes. And Roger, he poured his heart out to me. It was amazing. I think it was the last interview that Roger had before he died.
Hmm. What are some of the highlights from that Maris interview? Maybe things that the fans don't know or didn't know.
Well, I think some of the things they knew, the details is what they didn't know. I mean, Roger, for instance, in 1961, he said to me at one point, I wish I'd never broken Babe Ruth's record for a single season home runs. Because every day, starting about June, reporters would all come up to him and said, do you think you can beat Babe Ruth's record? But, I mean, it was like over and over and over again. And he really didn't much like the media, didn't like the press, didn't like to be asked questions, wanted to be left alone, that sort of thing. Mm. And so by the end of the season, he started losing his hair. He was under such pressure. And miraculously, despite all that pressure, he did beat Babe Ruth's record. Amazing. He had 61 home runs in 1961.
Well, Bob Shepard wrote a famous poem dedicating it to Tracy Stallard.
Yes. Yes.
Tracy Stallard threw the pitch that Maris hit for number 61. That was a highlight for me, meeting Bob Shepard to talk to him.
Oh, Bob Shepard was wonderful.
Boy, Peter Golubac is with us. The book, I'll tell you, is terrific. It's one of those you can pick up any chapter. And as I said, and Peter described, it's not question and answer. It's more of a story that's easy to read about these players and their details of their playing career. We had Pumpsy Green on the show years ago.
Yep.
And
yep.
Lived in the, you know, in Berkeley, and he was a baseball coach here, and of course talked about being the last African-American to integrate baseball with the Red Sox.
That's right.
But there also was another part of Pumpsy's story that you have in the book that involves Gene Conley. Yeah. And I wish I could have met Gene Conley. I really do. 6'8". He played. He's a great pitcher for the old Milwaukee Braves and Boston Braves. And then, of course, he played for the Celtics.
He played for the Celtics, and he played for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, but there was a part of this story that's legendary, that's in the book, and Conley tells it so well. Tell us a little bit of it.
So well. I mean, it was a meaningful part of his life. He had pitched in a game at Yankee Stadium, and the bus was headed to Newark Airport to fly out, and the bus was in traffic. And he looks out the window, and he sees a bar. So he says to Pumpsy, come on, let's go. So the two of them get off the bus, and they go to the bar. And Conley says to Pumpsy, I want to fly to Jerusalem. So Pumpsy has no interest in flying to Jerusalem, though he did have a drink with Conley. So Pumpsy somehow got back onto the bus because the bus was stuck in traffic there. And Conley took off. And Conley went to Idlewild Airport, which is now JFK. And the problem he had was that you need a passport to fly from the United States to Jerusalem, Israel. And he didn't have a passport, so he was sort of turned down. So it was 2-3 days before he joined the Red Sox, and the writers were wondering, you know, where is he? What's going on? What's doing? Well, Gene was telling me that the pressure of playing professional basketball and then playing professional baseball and not having any time off, he said finally, you know, it had gotten to him. And so he was sort of having, I won't say it was sort of a religious, whatever the word might be, But you know, it was interesting. Of the places he wanted to go to Jerusalem to see the Holy Land. And it was just wonderful the way he told it. Just he loved the guy. He was just terrific.
It's a great story. He wanted to make it right with his maker. I think remember that line
that's
from
right.
The book.
Right.
The book really is fun because the interviews, Peter, they span a number of years. How many – you go back to the first one in the book and to the last one. How many years do you span here?
Well, most of them are from the mid-40s to the mid-60s. So I do have one special one that I put in there. He was not a player. His name was Ed Froelich, and when I was living in Englewood, New Jersey, he called me up one day. He wanted to write a book, Ed Froelich. Ed Froelich was the trainer for Joe McCarthy when Babe Ruth was playing with the Yankees in the 20s. He was also a trainer for McCarthy in the 40s with the Red Sox, and he was a trainer for the Brooklyn Dodgers when Babe Ruth in the late 30s was a coach for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Because he had these marvelous, marvelous conversations with Babe Ruth that I just absolutely felt, you know, if there's one person people want to read stories about, it's Babe Ruth. And so I put, Babe is not really the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Babe was really, at that time, sort of the late 30s. Of the two stories, one was about, you know, his called shot in the 1932 World Series. Ruth absolutely told Ed Froelich that he had absolutely not called his shot. You know, he said, you know, Ed, can you hear me? And Ed said, yeah, I can hear you. And Babe said, can you really hear me? Ed says, yeah, I can hear you. And Babe said, if I had pointed to center field, Ed Root would have put that ball right through between my eyes and killed me. You know, so
it's a great story. Frankie Crisetti was on our show, and Frankie said the big guy came in the dugout and said to me the next day, if they want to believe I called the shot, let them believe it. What do I care?
That's right.
And that's what
exactly
he said.
Right.
That's what he said, and I'm glad you confirmed that. I'm glad the first confirmation I got on that.
There was a fellow by the name of George Burke who took photographs of the Yankees. Everybody. He took Burke photographs. They're very famous. He took them in the 30s, 20s and 30s. And I had interviewed him. He was 92 years old. And he was sitting right next to the Cubs dugout where he told me the story of how Ruth was, you know, and Ed Froelich telling the same story, that Charlie Ruth threw a strike and Ruth put up one finger and pointed to the Cubs dugout. Mm-hmm. See, Mark Koenig had been the Yankee shortstop and had gone over to the Cubs. And Koenig had helped the Cubs to the World Series, and they had given Koenig one half of a World Series share. And Ruth was furious. Koenig was a friend of his, and Ruth thought they were a bunch of cheapskate bastards. And Ruth was calling them every name in the book. And so in that particular bat, Ruth threw a strike, and he pointed to the Cubs dugout and started calling him all sorts of names. And then Ruth threw another strike and Ruth put up two fingers and pointed to the Cubs dugout and called him a bunch of names. And on the next pitch, he hit the ball over the center field fence.
Beautiful. I love baseball.
I know.
I love the stories. It's a great story. Well, the book is terrific. It really is. It's Whispers of the Gods. It's out by Roman and Littlefield. We promote local bookstores. We have the Book Tree up in Montclair.
Oh,
I'm sure David will get it up there. But it's Peter Golenbach, G-O-L-E-N-B-O-C-K. And I'll tell you, I had so much fun reading the chapters, and it's written so well. And I know the issue of chasing people down and getting the interviews, but you did it beautifully, and it is a good sequel to Lawrence Ritter's Glory of Their Times, and I agree with you. That is the Bible of baseball.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Pleasure it. Having you on. Thank you, Peter. Good luck.
Take care, Mark. Thank you. Right. Take care.
Thank you. All right, more coming up. KMBR 680, 104.5, the sports leader.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draftaccess to register for free entry today.